Good evening. It's good to be here with you. I regularly get to CASB, but it's the first time I've been out to this meeting, and I'm been blessed already, anticipating more blessing. I'm supposed to talk a little bit about Christian Light curriculum. Christian Light started producing curriculum was probably back in the mid-70s. They had a little bit, but to produce a full curriculum, that came about in 1980. Sadly, it was not our own. It was Alpha and Omega Publications books. They allowed us to change some content to make it Anabaptist, and then we put our covers on, and we've been paying royalties to them ever since. It's painful. Those good steward Mennonites just goes against the grain. So we started building our own curriculum. When we started back there, we had a few social studies books. And we kept building on those. Then we started working on curriculum. And some of you know about light units and, you know, it's individualized. And we went around and we told communities that, well, we were trying to follow an ACE pattern. So we made schools sign contracts for at least 2 years, and you had to do it our way. We found out Anabaptists don't like that very well either. And now I'm to the point where I'm trying to rectify that by going around and visiting schools. A couple years ago, I went to give a presentation to a community that was getting ready to start a school, but most of the parents had been in a Christian school before. Before I started the meeting, I said, how many of you went to a Christian school, you know, when you were in school age? And almost all of them raised their hand. I said, how many of you had a bad experience, or maybe I asked them if they used Christian Light. Almost all of them raised their hand. I said, how many of you had a bad experience? 90% of them raised their hand. And I thought, this isn't going to go real well. I said, how many of you had a good experience? And one mom raised her hand. And she had come to the school I taught at, and she was one of my students. So, anyhow, Christian Light has come a long way. We've learned a lot from our mistakes. We've had this thing. This is what I tell schools now. Christian Light makes a good servant, but a very poor master. It's just like fire. Use it properly. Find the way that it works best for your community, and you'll get along fine with it. Do it exactly like the book. Somebody's going to be frustrated. Some people do it by the book are completely happy, too. But I'm amazed. I'm a school rep. I go around and visit schools for Christian Light. And one of the things I'm amazed at is how many different ways there is to use our curriculum. And I could go on about that where I could tell you that probably close to 75% of our material is our own now, probably more than that, especially if you look at just the first 8 grades. And that's exciting to me. Some of that we're into the second edition. So that means we realize the first edition wasn't very good, so we're doing it again. And down the road, there'll be a third edition, I'm sure, sometime for my grandchildren. So, if the Lord tarries. But what I want to talk to you about tonight for a little bit is some of the things that are new and that, I'm excited about because they are new and because I like reading. Reading is, to me, is so important. If I can get a student to read well in school, all the rest of the school work is much easier. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's much easier if they read well. So, one of the things that we have struggled with over the years is struggling students. We as adults struggle with struggling students. The students are in our midst. All of us know what that's like. I taught school for 11 years back in the 80s and 90s. And then for quite a few years I didn't teach. But last year I started teaching again. I'm teaching now. And last year I had, it was just a small school, but all of my students, none of my students, maybe I should say it that way, none of my students were struggling students. Wow. And I figured sooner or later that'll end. And what do we do with those struggling students? So, some of the things that we are coming out with, this is new, it's not in the catalog yet, and this is just a sample of the field test version. It'll be back on the table, you can take a look at it back there. But it's called Phonics Refresh. Our phonics lesson called Learning to Read has 110 lessons in it. That's regular for the first grade phonics course. This is a refresher course that is only 20 lessons. And it takes them quickly through just the rules, things that they learn in those 110 lessons, but in a much shorter, more condensed version. This is so new, we're not even sure how to use it. And so, as teachers start to use it, and there's teachers with all sorts of ideas, the office cringes a little bit when I start giving out ideas because they have to try to make it work then. But I've got teachers that are talking about using this at the beginning of second grade as a review to what they learned in first grade. There are more people are saying, yeah, this is more of a second grade thing. The student didn't do well in first grade. We did go ahead and pass that student on to second grade. What about that? What are we going to do with that child that is struggling? And we're hoping that this course can help a child with that. Some people say, nah, that probably won't work quite that way. Others are anxious to try it. And I'm sad that you can't go to the catalog and buy it yet. There are some people out there doing field tests and all. We believe that it will be ready for or be represented in our new catalog that comes out in March. So keep your eyes out for that if you're interested in that at all. But it is a phonics course that is only 20 lessons long. Some of the things that we provide and are working on, we do because of our Russian Mennonite brethren who have a lot of English second language people in their midst, and they are also using this, and they're using it in many different ways. A family decides to move from Mexico to back to Canada, and they've got sixth and seventh graders that barely know how to read. They use something like this to get them started. Not sure which I'm most excited about, but this is another one. This is has samples in it. It's called Phonics Foundations. Phonics Foundations, for those of you that know about school curriculum, would be kind of like Susan Barton program material. That is something that a lot of schools who use conventional curriculums, such as ours, Rod and Staff, that teach how to read a certain way, this teaches it a different way. And Susan Barton, we know, has been successful in many communities in helping out with some of the struggling students. It does not fix all problems. We don't expect this to fix all problems either. There are different levels to this course, and we're still in the field testing stages of it as well. But again, it is supposed to come out in the March catalog. Susan Barton program and our program is based on a system or a method called the Orton-Gillingham method. And we couldn't copy Susan Barton. We didn't want to. But we needed to start back there. And there are college courses that you can take to learn that. Christian Light was willing to send some of their writers to college for this, and those ladies came back and wrote this course. And they're very nervous about it, and I kind of understand how they feel. It's kind of like a child to them, I think, and they're afraid to let it out in the big wide world, but they'll get over that. One thing that's different about ours is that we have a lot, or maybe I shouldn't say a lot, because I don't know that for sure. We have multiple assessment tests that the child can take to help place them. In the Susan Barton program, they start usually at the bottom and just work their way up. And we felt like that with assessment tests, it could be that they wouldn't have to start at the bottom level, or that at some point they could cease to do it, or that they could jump. I'm really leery of jumping. I have an older sister that did that in school, and I'm still a little bitter about that. So, but phonics foundations, this is for a struggling student, although this isn't just something you can take into the classroom and use readily there. You're going to have to think about another teacher. This is something that goes with a tutor. Doesn't have to be all day long. It can be, for some people, they work that in with that, if it's just one child, it might be an hour a day, that type of thing. And at one time it was said that you needed to skip language arts. We don't promote that anymore. You stick with where you're at in language arts. But some of their other work may have to be relieved so that they can get all their work done. Are there any questions about any of this? I'm rattling on. And I didn't tell you I'd allow you to do this, did I? Yes. Same problem. Yes. Now, one thing that teachers don't like, but they're not sure if they don't like it or not. They just are used. Those that taught Susan Barton are used to something that I have a trouble saying, and that's manipulatives. They're little plastic squares that come with that. We do not have that. The two ladies that went and got the training said that through the training, they felt like it isn't necessary. I hear these other teachers that use Susan Barton program, they say, but the children really like them. And then they kind of think a little bit, and then they say, but it takes so much time. So, you know, I'm not sure where to come out on that. Somebody else had a question? Can what?
Can your ladies allow a few more people to test that?
Well, if you talk to the right person, it has happened before. I can't remember which it was. I was doing a teacher training this summer in Dalhart, Texas. And a very liberal setting. There was a woman principal at that school. She was taking the course, and I told them about this one day, and she got excited. She said, I know three students that need that right now. What can you do, Lyndon? And she is getting a version of that. Our problem is that at this point, somebody getting it would get it in a PDF version, and we really don't like those out there floating around. But, yeah, I'm not quite sure what to tell you on that, Jonah. Other questions? Yeah, I'm excited about this enough to tell you, but I don't like the fact that it's not out yet in the catalog. Because I did some of that last year, and it got put off in a whole nother year. That was disappointing to a lot of teachers. It was about something completely different. Tell you about something else, and that's our science program. As far as I'm concerned, that's been our weakest link for many, many years. Most of the schools I visit do not use our science. A few do. My school doesn't use our science. But this is a sample of what grade four, a little bit of grade four, will look like. But it says it's available. We hope it to be available in 2025. So we have a ways to go. There are a few of these that I brought along, maybe a dozen or so. So you're welcome to pick them up. They're back on the table, but kind of keep them per school or something like that, so that more people have an opportunity for that. There will be full color and interesting. We want science to be something that's interesting. In the back of this the back page. One page is about our new biology course that's coming up, and then our new chemistry course is coming up as well. So we have those two science curriculums that are just about ready. And then, actually, I can hardly wait till the biology and chemistry gets completely done, because the men that are working on that will then switch to working solely on elementary, and that's where my biggest desire is. We need elementary science, good elementary science. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
30 years ago, I was in school doing this rod and staff. We had an assignment to write a directions, how to get from point A to point B. Jonathan Erb was in my class. Back then he was Johnny, but I don't remember what I wrote about, but I remember what Jonathan wrote about. He wrote about how to get from his house in Texas to his house in Pennsylvania. Turn by turn directions. Now that lesson is in eighth grade English, if you want to look it up. I don't remember that it was in eighth grade, but that's what I remember that class. I think that's valuable, you know, for a person to be able to say, okay, here's how we're going to go. Point, we're going to turn here, we're going to go here, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Rod and staff has served me well, served us well. Communicating effectively. That's what that was part of that English course. So yes, I went to school, we studied rod and staff. As I was growing up, my parents were involved in the homeschool conventions, and we'd load up all their books, and we'd go to these conventions and sell rod and staff. I really wasn't that cracked about rod and staff. It wasn't like something, this is what I want to do. But then we moved to California. And again, there was an opportunity to go to conventions, and, well, I knew how to do this. I knew what you were supposed to do, how to sell it and all that. So we got into that. And my wife grew up in the rod and staff in that community, and so she was familiar with the publishing part of it. So as I talk about rod and staff, I'm not an employee of rod and staff. I just sell the stuff. I buy it from them just like any of the school can. So you look at rod and staff, there's flaws. And that's just part of it, but there's nothing I can do about that. So broadly categorizing, thinking about the difference between CLE and rod and staff, just in real broad terms, CLE does excellent at saying, what does your school need? What can we help you with? Where are your weak points? What can we do for you? They send out their school reps. They have their different programs to help the schools. Rod and staff doesn't do that. They don't send out a school rep. Part of the reason is because of the way that rod and staff use their purpose, why they publish it. And basically, as I would understand it, is we figured out what we want for our schools. We looked at the end, this is what our students need to be able to know, and this is what we're going to what we want them to learn. So we've developed this curriculum, and if you want to use it, if you want to buy it, you can, you're welcome to, but you're not obligated to. We're not going to change our curriculum just for your school. Now there again, there's pros and cons both ways. But to me, it's a blessing, you know, whenever somebody looks long term down the road, you know, what's it going to take? So as we talk about rod and staff, I'm not criticizing CLE, and like like Elmer Glick talks about, you know, he says, you know, if you're using that, you know, this is not at a pitch to change it, to change anything else. So if you're happy with it and it works for you, that's great. But what I want to talk about is the benefits. What is it about rod and staff that if you're not using, you ought to consider? And there again, I would add a clarification to that. And that is, as you look as a school, you know, where do you want to end up? For our school at home, one of the things that we want to do is there's a state test that our high school students take. That's another whole subject as far as why you take it or if you should take it. But anyway, neither rod and staff nor CLE teaches sufficient information to be able to pass that test. And so we use Saxon to supplement that. But as we talked to, as we heard this evening, you know, as far as the fear of the Lord being the foundation, being the starting point of knowledge, that's where I think rod and staff does an excellent job at. And in thinking further about that, the fear of the Lord being the beginning of knowledge. So as you think about that, where do you want your students, where does the school students going to end up? What should they be able to do as they graduate, as they leave your school? What should be the qualifications that they can be able to accomplish? What do they know? I called someone at Rod and Staff and said, you know, what sets your curriculum apart? What sets you different? What makes you different from other curriculum that's out there? And that's basically what that's one of the things that he said. That principle of Proverbs 1, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And they incorporate that, they make an effort to put that in different parts of their curriculum. And, for example, in the reading, the lower grade, the elementary grade in elementary school, first grade, they learn to read, learn to pronounce words in the creation story. Second and third grade, reading is the Old Testament stories. Fourth grade reading is the New Testament stories. And we think, okay, not a big deal. Some years ago, I was visiting our school. Now, I feel good about our school. I feel good about our parents. I mean, I think our parents are the best. Well, I mean, you understand what I mean. In other words, I don't think they're slacking off. But anyway, I was sitting in our classroom in our school. This was students that were in our church. And this teacher was in this, I forget which grade it was, second or third grade, but I know it was in those Old Testament stories. And they were going to read this story, that, you know, how the teacher does it. Okay, we're going to read it out loud. Okay, now we're going to talk about it. So the teacher said, okay, do you know what's going to happen in this story? And the students didn't know. I thought, wow, that is interesting. Now, I'm not criticizing the parents, but what I am saying is the fear of the Lord, picking up the fear of the Lord, is not going to happen by accident. You know, it's going to happen whenever parents and the school work together. Hey, we're going to teach this. We're going to teach this at home. We're going to teach this at school because there's going to be some overlap. They're going to teach the same things, but it's better that they learn it twice than if they don't learn it at all. So I'm just thankful that they have the opportunity to learn these things. And then in fifth grade, it separates. So you have the Bible and reading together in the first four grades. And then in fifth grade, it separates. So you have the Bible as a separate subject where the students use the Bible, actual King James or whatever, the Bible itself as the textbook for the fifth through tenth. And then they have a separate reading course for the reading. And here recently, one of our teachers came to us and was talking about, typically the way Rod and Staff operates is you use the book, the textbook, and then it's used over and over again, and then you write your answers in another piece of paper. So that's what we were doing for our Bible, and the teacher came to us and he said, you know what, why don't we use the book and have the students write in them, and they're paperback books, so it's easy to do. Why don't we have the students write in the books so they can take them home, because these books are so good they ought to take them home and use them and keep them on their bookshelf for future reference. And we said, you know what, that's a good idea. Let's change our policy on that. But anyway, so if you don't use Rod and Staff curriculum and reading, at least consider having the readers on your shelf, you know, for students to read, because it's great reading material. If you want to browse through, we have some in the back there. There's stories in there, some good stories that use big words that they're not going to know about. And there again, it reminds me of in our school, their teachers came to us recently and said, you know what, we're okay with this curriculum, but there's some stuff in here that the students are asking us questions and we don't even know the answers to some of that. What do these words mean? And so we talked about it as a board and we were like, you know what? We want our children to be able to read and understand the King James Bible. We want them to, the King James Bible uses some words that we don't normally use. And we're not saying that that has to be a part of the normal language, but we want them to be able to understand it. So we're not going to change this. There again, it's a subject that, you know, as a board that you would have to talk about. But for us, that's important that the children understand the words that are in the Bible. Moving on, you're probably familiar with the English. It's an excellent course, excellent course. And that's not just my opinion, although I grew up with it. But there, and maybe you're familiar with that, Susan Wise Bauer wrote this book, The Well-Trained Mind. This is years ago, whenever the homeschooling was starting, you know, and there's just all kinds of stuff to homeschool with, curriculum. So what are you going to use? What are you going to, how are you going to figure this out as far as a homeschooler? So this lady, you know, she had the credentials, so she goes through and evaluates all the different materials. And she put Rodenstaff English pretty much near the top. And she highly recommended it. So you go to a convention, I mean, it's easy to sell the Rodenstaff English. I mean, it's just people are familiar with it. But you think about it, what does a publisher in the middle of Kentucky, what do they have going for them that they can write this great English course? And I don't know, other than I think it's God's blessing. You know, to be able to put it together, and it's good because when we go to the conventions and sell it, you know, it can be advanced because the way Rodenstaff writes it is, so you start in second grade, and by the ninth and tenth grade, you are just basically writing. You're putting the stuff that you learned to put it to practice, which is a good thing, but it goes through really fast. And so we tell people at the conventions that, you know, don't necessarily look at the number on the book. Just because it has a 3 doesn't mean your fifth grader should be intimidated because he doesn't know this stuff, he needs to learn it. But what a blessing. And if our schools, and they start in second grade, and so they can be writing, they can be speaking, doing all this stuff in the ninth and tenth grade. Again, what is your goal for the graduating students? What should they be able to do? You know, write those directions, be able to write a good paper or whatever. That's not something to be taken lightly as far as learning how to speak, use correct words. Here recently, one of the fellows that worked with us, he's not from a Mennonite background, he's made a comment about our people, the people from our church, in their communication, they use the correct grammar. I'm not saying that to lift us up, but what I am saying is, if you ever sit in a sermon or somebody presenting and they use improper language mispronunciation, or they, you know, their thoughts don't flow or whatever, it can be distracting. And if we can teach it, if our children can learn how to do this, that's just a wonderful opportunity. Why wouldn't you? Moving on, the Rodenstaff spelling. Their course, I think, is a great course, and that's another course that we get asked for there to conventions. And it basically teaches the root word, and then you have all the additions, the parts that go with it. And then so you can learn how to spell a word by considering the additions, the suffixes and the prefixes, and then also where the word comes from, the language that it started from. And if you know anything about those national spelling bees, those big spelling bees, that's one of the things that they do is here's the word, and then here's as a hint what language it came from. Because, I mean, you know, if it's going to be French, it's going to have all these vowels in it, and you know, and so it's helpful to understand how a word is spelled whenever you know where it came from, and that's what Rodenstaff does. But one of the things is if you just look at the achievement test, students that do Rodenstaff English on the achievement test typically do poorly. Why is that? And I don't know that I have all the answers for that. But my point is, as a board, as you think about what's happening here and you see that dip in the spelling, it's not perfect. So supplement it. What else can we do? How else can it be done? And that's a blessing. You come to a place like this, how do you do it? You know, how do your teachers teach the spelling? math. And here's another whole thing is language we could talk about. Rodstaff teaches math in a mastery level, in a mastery concept, mastery method, rather than the spiral method. And, that gets into the way CLE does the spiral method with the teaching. So you have a math lesson that talks about decimals, it talks about fractions, it talks about money. Well, Rodstaff, you know, you're just learning decimals, and then we get all done, then we're going to go to fractions, and then we get all done, and then we're going to go to money. There's difference of opinions on that, so I'm not going to get into one better than another. There's advantages both ways. But what I want to do, what I want to talk about, though, is the record keeping. In the upper grades, the ninth grade, I think, is the record keeping, and that is a very good course. The record keeping gets into, basically, is divided into personal finances, and then it gets into business, understanding some business record keeping, and learning how to keep track of money is something that really needs to be learned, and it doesn't come natural. So, and it's there again. It's typical rod and staff style, and it can be pretty advanced. And so, if a student takes it, sometimes it can be mind stretching. But then again, there's not enough in there to be able to run your business. So if you say, hey, look, I want to learn how to run, I want to start my own business, I'm an entrepreneur, I want to do my own thing, so can I take the course and be good to go? No, it's not going to work that way. Back whenever I went to school, Rod and Staff hadn't published this course yet, but I did take another accounting course. And well, I'm one of those people that I want to be in business for myself, and so we had the opportunity. And I took my records to the CPA, and he says, do you understand debits and credits? Do you know what a T-account is? Well, thankfully, my school might had given me something to base it on, know what a little T-account is. And so I had something to operate off of. But, wow, I was really ignorant. And so he sat down. I mean, so I'm paying this man to do my taxes, and he's sitting me down and teaching me stuff that I could have learned in school. Well, more recently, we had somebody come in, and a consultant come in, and he says, in my own words, he says, do you understand budgeting? Do you know how to project your income and project your expenses? Do you know how to figure out this is my target and this is what it's going to take to get there? There again, it's all in the record keeping. So you just, you know, to me, I'm all lifetime, I'm catching up on some of this stuff. Moving on, music. Teaches the music courses, teaches the in the lower grades, it's pretty simple. It moves along, it advances, and they are revising. It's some of that needs to be revised, and they are revising it. But in the upper grades, like the eighth grade, it gets into some good, deep stuff in the music. And then there's also, it's not in the catalog, and you're not going to find it unless you call and ask for it. Is beyond the eighth grade, and that gets into some of the stuff as far as writing music and song selection, song leadership, and that kind of thing. But you know how it is. You're sitting in church, and it's just it's just been a blessing, just been wonderful. And the service is about to close, and the song leader gets up, and he leads a song. It just fits. You just worship as you lead a song, as that song is sung. Well, that doesn't typically just happen by accident. There has to be some thought put into that. And that's what this course, this unpublished course that Rod and Staff gets into some of that. So, there again, I think a person needs to learn some of that. But why bother teaching transpositions and voice control and all this stuff? I mean, you look at that eighth grade stuff, that's been some of the criticism that we've gotten is, what's the point? Why do you need to learn all this? Learn how to sing in church, so what's the point? Well, I think the church needs people that know how to read music, can take a new song and figure out what it takes to be able to sing this song. The church needs people that can write new songs. You know, if the only songs that we sang was the songs that our people, our church, wrote, what would we have? I think our young people need to write songs, but what's it going to take to be able to do that? Geography. There's a lot that could be talked about on some of this. One of the recent books that came out, and if I have it in the back there, is, you know, it's a nice book. It's full color. Goes all over the world, looking at different parts of the world. Whenever you study geography, when you study history, when you study science, it is important, I believe, it is very important that that is looked at from God's perspective. You know, when it rains, is it just because all the conditions were perfect and therefore it rained? Or is it God that brought the rain? Events in history. You read the Bible, it'd be interesting, you know, it talks about how God orchestrated some of those events. And that's what I like about the way the history and geography is written there. Rod and staff has been around for a while. There's a sense that it's been tried and proven. But like some other things, it's been tried and found difficult. It's a lot of work. At the conventions, we don't have very many people that come around and say, you know what, I did this stuff in school and I want my children to do it. It happens some, but not a whole lot. It's more like, hey, this is great. My children would benefit from this. You know, well, that's true, they would, but it is a lot of work. Learning is hard work. Another thing to consider about Rod and Staff is the way the teacher's manuals are written. The teacher's manuals are written in a designed so that inexperienced, unskilled teachers, young people, can at least make it happen. You know, they don't have to have the credentials or whatever to be able to answer the questions. So those are helpful. You've heard the statement that you can't judge a book by its cover. Well, that's true, Rod and Staff. You look at their reading books, it's just a plain green book or yellow book, a little bit of writing on it. Hey, what's supposed to be attractive about this? You look at the storybooks, and you're like, hey, you know, I'm not a publisher, I'm not a story writer, but I think I could have done better than this. Well, there was a book that I had on my shelf, and I thought, you know what, this, and it was about finances. So I was like, hey, this is, I ought to read this before PSLI so I can talk about it. Well, I read it, and, well, it's good, but it's not that good. I read some other ones. You know, so my point is sometimes you can't judge a book by its cover, and so you have to get into it. You have to know what's in there. And so some of the books, you know, they're okay, but some of them, they are really good. Some of those Rod and Staff books are really good. And one of them is that, and I'm going to let Jonathan talk about all these, but the Handbook for Creative Teaching. I know it's a big, thick book, and it can be pretty intimidating, but if you don't know what, if you're a teacher or you're a board member and you don't know what you're doing, you know, that's a great resource. Just open the cover and, like, it's just like 1, 2, 3. This is how you do it. Last but not least, one of the things to consider with Rod and Staff is the way that it's put together, in the sense that the book is designed to be used by one class and then next year used again. And so if you look at those free ones in the back, you look over the front cover, and there's the student in this year, and then the student the next year, and the student the next year. Well, what that does is you buy the book and you use it over and over again, the cost goes down. And so it's easy to not spend too much money. But there again, what is the cost? What should be the cost of a good, solid, godly education? It's not just measured in dollars and cents. One of the things that I like about the way Rod and Staff does it is that there is a teacher. He's in front of his class, and he's instructing his students. There's that teacher-student interaction. They have to learn. The teacher is directing the learning process. The teacher is there presenting the material, instructing, the modeling. And that's a good thing, I think. It's not just that it's all learning out of the book, and that's important and it's part of it, but there's that process, that learning back and forth from the teacher. And as was talked about before, that are the teachers, are they good role models for them to follow? Let it be said of our students that they have learned how to learn, and that is sufficient. You know, if they can take the Bible, you know, I didn't understand the English stuff and that history was over my head, but I can open my Bible and I can understand what's there and I can tell somebody about it. If they can do that, and this is on a side note, that's one of the things I like about teaching algebra, is that is that process. It's not so much that I'm going to use algebra later, maybe you will, but it's that learning how to learn. And that is such an important thing, because there are students, there are issues in our churches today that young people are going to have to learn how to learn to deal with some of these things. You know, for example, technology. And that process of learning how to learn is such a valuable thing. Anyway, we talked about some of those books, and I have some of them back there. A lot of what we have in the back there is storybooks, but there's a little bit of the curriculum, and if you want to talk about it, I mean, we got the catalogs, and you can, if you're not familiar with some of that stuff. But I'd love to interact with it more, interact with you more on what they have. But it's been a blessing to me.